to be taking up values, and in particular, we would like to look at the value of respect. Why are we looking at values, and what is special about respect? What difference does it make to the self individually? Does it make any difference in the world? We'd like to take a look at some of these aspects. I study at the Brahma Kumaris World Spiritual University at Mount Abu in India, and we at this university work to create a value-based society. Now, any time you want to do something with a view to extending it in the larger field of the world, naturally you have to experiment on yourself. And so we are nearly about 500,000 people scattered throughout the world from all different cultures and backgrounds, all experimenting and working on ourselves individually in the context of our families, our work situation, our position in society, to see how these values have their practical application and what impact it has in the world around us. So today especially, we'd like to look at respect as a value. Now you will say, well, everyone learns how important it is to be respectful, but sometimes the way we learn about it is not quite as deep or as spiritual or as effective as it could be. And so what we want to do here is re-examine, re-evaluate, what do we really mean by respect? And if you look at the word in an analytical way, respect can be described as looking back at yourself. So one of the ways in which we can tell if we are being respectful is if we are able to maintain our own self-respect. And we usually learn so much attention on respecting others, and sometimes it is at the expense of one's self-respect. And then what happens is, if you don't respect yourself, you really cannot respect other people or the world. And so it creates character distortions or character defects. And the sign of that is a feeling of being not real, of being not authentic, of being somehow alienated from that essential self that we feel in spirituality is so important to achieve and to sustain and to maintain, and really come from that place of inner self-respect or self-esteem. You may be aware that across the globe there is a problem of self-respect or self-esteem, and it takes many forms. So therefore, we're going to begin with that aspect of self-respect, of self-dignity. Where does it all start? Really, we could say that it starts in the quality of our thinking. Now, this is why meditation is very useful in order for us to develop this value of respect. Normally speaking, our mind is scattered all over the place and very much engaged in external things, in other people, in past memories, in concerns about the future and what people think of us and so on. So therefore we adopt a certain way of being which is calculated to be pleasing to the outside, but very often we forget about the real inner authentic self. So when we meditate, we turn all the attention within, setting aside some time for that. If we do it regularly, if we do it on a daily basis, you get good at it. Like anything, if you do it frequently, you get good at it. Once you begin, you might wonder, well, am I doing it right? Is this how to do it? How should I do it? Of course, there are many ways in which we can actually learn, but learning has to be followed by experimentation and practice. So meditation on the self, turning the self within and looking inside, searching out that essential aspect of our own being, is an extraordinary process, because when you realize the wonder of what a human being is, that is the key to the beginnings of respect for that. We call it the soul, the essential self. There are a variety of words that are used for this, but the soul is probably the cleanest, the subtlest. And this is what we want to try and do, is to respect the self means to respect our own soul. And we can't respect something we don't know. And we can't know something without going inside and exploring it, because there's a process of discovery that's going on. When we look inside, in meditation, the first thing we discover is the quality of purity and peace and wisdom. This is an essential quality, and as we begin to experience it, feel it, naturally your sense of self is going to really grow and develop. So you start thinking of yourself, and then you look at your thoughts. You know, we're thinking all day long. Good thoughts, bad thoughts, ordinary thoughts, thoughts that we would rather other people wouldn't know we're thinking, private thoughts, secret thoughts, all kinds of thoughts. And then on top of that, we get distracted, we react. There are so many things that are going on in our minds that the mind is really very turbulent. So what we try to do in meditation is to create calmness in the mind, so that we're then able to take a look, to look back at the self, in that sense where respect means to look back. And when the mind is calm and you look back at the self, you're able to experience, to see with your inner eye these essential qualities. And what this does is it inspires us to act and speak according to that inner quality. And then when our mind wants to go off in a direction which is not suitable for our own dignity, we will notice it, because our intellect, our conscience is getting sharpened up. And where previously we might not notice or we might not care, we begin to see how much it affects us and how much it affects what we do. And none of us like to do something or say something that we later regret or feel embarrassed about. So the beginnings of respect for the self is respect for our own dignity, respect for our own integrity. And as we begin to discover ourselves in this way, what happens is, naturally, when we see another human being, we also have that sense that is another being who has a right to their own self-respect. One of the extraordinary things that happens when you develop yourself spiritually is that your perception, the way you see the rest of the world, the way you look at another person, actually influences that other person. So that if I do not have respect for myself, then what's going to happen? I'm forced to adopt a position of ego. So what happens when I adopt a position of ego is either I feel superior to other people and I look at them as if they're lower than me, they're inferior, or I feel inferior and I look at everybody through those eyes of inferiority, and it's never possible to have that vision of equality, which is absolutely crucial to the development of respect. So we need to develop this this eye, this discerning eye that is able to have a sense of my own self-respect and regard, and to understand who another person is and respect their spirituality, their inner qualities, and really distinguish that being from their behavior. You might think that that's a bit of a strange thing to want to do, but if you look at a person in terms of their potential, in terms of their possibilities, you will actually change what they do. And you know how we always want everybody to be different than the way they are. We try so hard to change persons and say, if they would only be like this, if they would only be like that, everything would be better. And of course, anyone who tries to change you, what do? You resist it. There's no way that you want to change. But if someone looks at you and sees your potential, in a very subtle way, it gives you the confidence and the inspiration to actually fulfill that potential. And so in the same way, one of the wonderful things we can do to generate respect is to develop that inner eye which sees so powerfully, so purely, so respectfully, that it actually makes another person become the way they could be, the way you would like them to be, without it being an imposition on that person or diminishing their sense of their own freedom or right to be who they are. And together with that kind of looking, also respecting another person means that we accept that person as exactly who they are. And that's a very important element of respect. When we don't value a person for who they are, and we always want them to be something different, then we're never really looking at them. We're never really relating to them. And so they feel, alienated or cut off. And so it's very difficult to develop trust in relationships and really good quality communication. Now, a further step from this mutual respect between myself and other individuals around me, they may be family members, they may be people at work, and of course the question arises, how do we have a vision of equality and respect when at the same time we all have different statuses, different positions in life, everyone has a unique part to play. And so we have to also add to that fraternal, respectful vision a real sense of being an actor who plays a role, and I have to understand my role, and I have to understand the other person's role or the other people's roles. And my concern is not so much what the other people are doing, because, to be quite honest, we really have no control over that, even though we might wish that we did. But what happens when we try to control other people's behavior is that our duty and responsibility to control our own selves is neglected, and then we make mistakes which then embarrass us. So the process is, in coming into interaction with others and connection and relationship, is to really be attentive on, let me do that which is the very best thing that needs to be done in this situation. And in that way we develop very good powers of judgment and discrimination. So what happens is, we practice to be an example. So we're not putting any force or trying to influence anyone else in a direct way, but we understand very well that by exerting all of our authority on our own self, that this becomes an inspiration. And then sooner or later, guaranteed, it's going to be influencing other people. And this influence is sometimes very subtle. We, in a spiritual practice, definitely require patience. This is another very good value, very good quality. Because, of course, in the modern world, we want everything to happen instantly. But spirituality is a subtle process. It's a subtle evolution of the soul. And through that, an evolution of our society. And therefore we need to understand that the seeds that we plant of practicing on a consistent basis will bear fruit in their own time. So sometimes if we find that we're not getting results that we expect in an immediate way, we need to just remind ourselves that people need to be able to get used to the changes that we're making within ourselves. They need to feel sure and secure that what we're doing is a permanent and a real thing. And as it becomes established, and as people come to expect that from a person who's practicing these values, the influence is gradually coming in. And you will find that it's not necessarily that other people will tell you directly, oh, you know, because you are practicing all these values, so I also feel inspired to do it. They may, but generally speaking, it doesn't happen like that. You will see, over the course of time, a change taking place that's almost imperceptible, but yet every so often, something will happen that will make you realize that there has definitely been a shift. So you can see that it's a process that begins with the self, and like concentric circles that move out, like the ripples when you drop a stone in a pond, your practice of giving respect to the self gives rise to that respect of others, and it creates an atmosphere of respectfulness in the environment and becomes an influence. Now, influence is a subtle one. Analogy is the incense stick. You light the incense stick and it spreads its fragrance. If you light an incense stick all the time, after a while you will not see it, you will not feel it, but it'll be there. You know, we get used to it. We almost get to take it for granted. But what happens when someone comes into that environment, they'll feel it very strongly, and they will be influenced by that. And that will cause them to naturally develop these qualities of respect. Inspiration is something that is much stronger than we realize. You know, we're so used to using force to get things done. It's very much part of modern Western fast-speed life. But more and more people are realizing that you can't control. It's a beautiful phrase that a friend of mine has written in a song. And the phrase is, you can't write your name on the sun. You know, and it's a very lovely expression, because it really helps us to understand that you cannot force things any more than you can write your name on the sun, but rather you become like the sun, who sits in one place and just radiates. The sun doesn't really care a cloud is coming or not coming, or the people are noticing or not noticing. The sun understands that its job is to radiate light, and that gives life to the earth. So in the same way, when we develop these values, we are acting as a person who is like a small sun, just understanding what we have to do and getting on with doing it. So we don't have to try and prove anything. We don't have to try to get anyone to tell us that we're doing something special or something good. So a quality that's very important within that is to have faith that what we're doing is right. And that begins with understanding. Your understanding feeds your meditation, your thinking, your inner work, and that inner work also feeds your understanding, and that also again feeds your meditation. So you're developing a cycle in which is self-sustaining and which actually grows that quality to such an extent that it even moves from the state of being a quality to a state that we could call a power. So a quality has a certain influence, but a power has an even greater influence. Again, the speciality of patience is very important. It's a daily thing. So we're developing the art of accumulating the quality so that it becomes then a power. This power is then radiated. It's like an investment in the world. You know, you just put it in and you're planting seeds, and you know and you have faith both that there will be a good result, because you understand the laws of spirituality, and the laws are as absolute as the laws of science. And so therefore we can understand them, we can experiment them, and as we begin to see the results, we have a strong and definite faith. So I would definitely recommend that you consider this in your life, experiment with some of these points, and just look inside and see what is your level of self-respect, respect for others, and what you would like to do with it. And you will enjoy it very much. Om Shanti. Shanti. We at the Brahma Kumaris World Spiritual University are working with a view to creating a value-based society. So what does that mean? What does that entail? What does the individual do in that? And is it possible for an individual to make any difference? If you look at the world today, of course, you see so many things disintegrating, there's corruption, there's all kinds of problems throughout the world, and many people are feeling that, what can I do? I'm just one, I'm weak, I'm alone, what can I do? And so today, we'd like to take up the value of cooperation to just address this feeling that is so strong in so many people, that just myself alone, or even if I gather together my friends, it's still too few, too little to make any difference in the world. But we feel very optimistic, and we want to take a look at this value of cooperation to examine the process of how people who work together in a good way can actually have the effect of changing the way our society functions. Now that's a pretty high aim, and so naturally we have to be willing to put in a reasonable amount of effort and a reasonable amount of time, because we have to be realistic about this. Let's look at cooperation in the natural world. We are surrounded by all kinds of examples, but we may not always look at them closely as examples or inspirations for us. But let's take a look at birds. Now, the geese from Canada have to fly thousands of miles every year in their migratory journey, and it's an amazing feat. You see the bird quite little, wingspans, you know, about a yard or so, and yet they manage to take off and cross the entire ocean. How do they do that? The secret is in actually their application of the special power of cooperation. These birds fly in a V formation. And a special reason why they do this. Each bird gets a lift from the bird in front of him, so that if you're flying at the back, it's very, very easy. Turn by turn, different birds take the front position and cut through the air, create that space in that wall of air, and create that lift to carry the others. And in that way, turn by turn, they actually help one another, because if one bird would try and do it by themselves, or if only one bird would take the lead and everybody else would be behind, it would never work. Another beautiful example of cooperation is the beehive, or the ant hill. These insects, each one has a special role to play, and they all function in a very special way. They communicate with each other, they go, they do what they have to do, they graduate from position to position, and it's by that perfect cooperation that everything is accomplished. And one thing that I find very fascinating about the beehive, for example, is the queen. You know, the queen bee, normally people say, well, the queen bee just lays the eggs and that's it. But that's not it. What does the queen bee do? The queen bee has a very special substance that emanates from her, which they call queen essence. And it's a very wonderful thing. The queen just sits in one place, and all the others who are working, the worker bees, they do everything they have to do, and they pass by the queen and pick up this essence, which gives them that special feeling, that special extra inspiration to be happy in what they're doing. And what I mean to say by this is that in any task, in any gathering where we need to come together to cooperate, there are many different things that different people have to do. Because sometimes an individual says, well, I don't have any skills, I don't have any talents, what can I do? And so remember that queen. And of course the queen is the most important bee in the entire beehive. And what does the queen do? Puts out good feelings. This is a very, very important ingredient in cooperation. Because, you know, when we want to work with another person, we always think that our way is the only way. And the other person also thinks their way is the only way. But what happens is those two ways are not the same, because every single one of us sees things differently. Every single one of us is unique. Every single one of us is special. And each and every one of us has different qualities and different shortcomings. So how do we come together in a collaborative, cooperative way? Well, there's a number of ways that we can apply. Take, for example, dancing. The formation dancing that is done, one of the most famous examples of cooperative dancing is the Gerba that is danced in Gujarat in India, where each one has to move in time with the others, and those movements are synchronized. There are folk dances from Russia and other places in Eastern Europe where the people move amongst each other in an extraordinary way, like a kaleidoscope, and all of it is based on cooperation. Cooperation is a very beautiful balance between knowing when to lead and when to follow. And so in the practice of spirituality, we're taught that perfection is about balance, and balance is about balancing two or more things together. And when something is in balance, it's always moving. And so a little bit this side, a little bit that side, a little bit this side, a little bit that side, and the thing stays stable because of balance. Every single one of us has to be able to assert our idea, our inspiration, our feeling. Because if we don't do that, then we are suppressing ourselves. And if we suppress ourselves, then we will feel resentment. If we feel resentment, when we give cooperation, it's not from the heart. It's out of a feeling of obligation and compulsion. And so it's not really cooperation, because inside that appearance of cooperation, there will be that feeling of resentment which poisons the result, and there can never be true cooperation. So therefore, we need to be able to have a large heart of generosity of spirit, to be able to understand that what I give in cooperation, others will also give me in cooperation. So that when I am inspired and I assert my idea, then I have to have my power and command cooperation from others. And if the others then return with some different thing in mind, then at that moment I also have to become cooperative. And there is a continuous negotiation that takes place. This fluidity of negotiation is a very important aspect of cooperation. The word that we use quite a lot when we want to come to agreement about something is to arrive at that agreement by consensus. And consensus and cooperation are very connected with one another. If we agree to do something because the majority of people want it to be that way, but I don't agree with it, and I just do it because it's a good idea to go with the majority, and if I don't go with the majority, I'm on my own, and I don't want to be on my own, so I cooperate. But again, there's that element of resentment in it. So creating consensus is a very important quality. Consensus takes more time to arrive at than a vote where there's a majority and a minority. Consensus occurs when everyone involved feels their right to speak their ideas and their opinions, and when everything is on the table and everyone looks at it in a feeling of mutual respect and regard, a very wonderful thing happens. On the part of everyone, as it continues to be described and discussed, gradually the truth of that matter presents itself. And everyone looks at that and recognizes it. And this then becomes the base of the consensus, the agreement of everyone. And if there is anyone who doesn't agree, then you talk to them and you hear what their concerns are, what their worries are. Quite possibly there are some misunderstandings that need to be clarified, because